If you had 10 defendants, you'd have to find a process serving company in each part of the country where those defendants resided or worked. And then you would fax, literally fax the documents over to them. And then each of those 10 process serving companies would hand it off to a brother-in-law or a sister-in-law to deliver the documents, to try to serve the documents on each of those defendants. The court, believe it or not, gives you 90 days to do that. And the process serving company just kind of goes dark. You don't know what's happening. You don't know the person that's actually doing the work. If you need an update, you have to call the process serving company that says, thank you for calling. I will call the process server and I'll get back to you with an update. So you have no real-time information about what's going on with this very important process. And it's very disconcerting because the lawsuit can't start until all these defendants have been served.
Today on Law Next, Eric Vogt, the lawyer who is the founder and CEO of Proof, a company that is disrupting something many lawyers have to deal with regularly in their practices, service of process. Earlier this year, Proof raised $7 million in a Series A funding round, and it says this platform is now used by more than 3,500 law firms and government agencies. I spoke with Vogt live at the Clio Cloud Conference in early October, where it was announced that Proof would be one of three third-party products to be the first to be fully embedded within the Clio platform. Before we get to that interview with Eric Vogt, please take a moment to learn about the sponsors that support this podcast. Legal accounting is complex. TrustBooks makes it easy with intuitive workflows, automatic three-way reconciliations, and dashboards to quickly track your trust account cash flow. TrustBooks is the solution every law firm needs to confidently manage its trust accounting without the added headache. Ready to improve your firm's trust accounting process? Visit TrustBooks.com today to learn more. Now on to my conversation with Eric Vogt. Welcome to Law Next. This is Bob Ambrogi, and this is another in the series of episodes I've been recording here at the Clio Cloud Conference. I'm set up on the conference floor talking to a number of the exhibitors and attendees and Clio executives and other people I run into here at the show. And I'm joined now by Eric Vogt, who is the founder and CEO of Proof. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Did I mangle your last name?
My last name is interesting, right? So it's V-O-O-G-T, and it's pronounced vote in an like you vote in an election. However, it's
so
Dutch.
So I said it right.
You said it right. It's Dutch because there's two O's, and I'm very proud of my heritage. And the way they say it in Holland is Vogt.
Oh.
So very
All
different.
Right. So you are a lawyer, and you are the founder and CEO of Proof. Let's just start with sort of the elevator pitch. What is Proof?
That's a great question. Proof was really built out of my frustration as a longtime trial lawyer. So I practice environmental law, a lot of plaintiff's cases, and construction law. And in both of those areas, you had to serve a lot of people. So there's 25 million lawsuits in our nation of laws here in the United States filed every year. And every one of those lawsuits has to be served by hand on the defendants in order to give them adequate notice and compel them to court and give the court jurisdiction. You have to hand those documents. It's called service of process.
Yep.
And so that is very difficult today, at least pre-Proof. If you had 10 defendants, you'd have to find, or your paralegal would have to find, a process serving company in each part of the country where those defendants resided or worked. And then you would fax, literally fax the documents over to them. And then each of those 10 process serving companies would hand it off to a brother-in-law or a sister-in-law to deliver the documents, to try to serve the documents on each of those defendants. The court, believe it or not, gives you 90 days to do that. And the process serving company just kind of goes dark. You don't know what's happening. You don't know the person that's actually doing the work. If you need an update, you have to call the process serving company that says, thank you for calling. I will call the process server and I'll get back to you with an update. So you have no real-time information about what's going on with this very important process. And it's very disconcerting because the lawsuit can't start until all these defendants have been served. So that, I just saw gobs of wasted time dealing with that. So we started what I think your listeners will understand very quickly is Uber for service or process. That discounts a little bit of what we do because it's a very legal focused thing that we're doing. But all our law firms and government agencies have to do to serve documents on their defendants and witnesses is upload them to our web app, which has some AI capabilities that pulls out the defendants' names, pulls out other information like court information that we need so that we comply with the rules of service of process for that court. And then the technology finds the process server on our platform that's closest to each one of those defendants. It provides a notification on our mobile app on their phone. They accept the job, geolocate the nearest FedEx, because these have to be hand-delivered, remember? And we're integrated, our technology is integrated with FedEx.
Right.
FedEx has the documents waiting for them. They pick them up on their route, and then they go try to deliver them, serve them. They make attempts to do that. Sometimes they're not home. Sometimes you got to go to the workplace. All of that is tracked by the law firm with geolocations, timestamps, photographs, and a direct line through a chat function with the server. So if there's anything wrong with the address or they don't have the unit number in the apartment complex or the defendant is trying to avoid service, the paralegal or the lawyer and the server can talk directly through this chat function. And that also includes our territory manager for that state or that part of the state. That way, you never have to pick up the phone. You never have to search through your email. I think Jack Newton, the CEO and founder of Clio, in his opening remarks said something like 98% of the emails you get, you don't answer, right?
Right. Yep.
And because of all those emails, it's really hard to search through there.
Yeah.
So we eliminate all those emails and phone calls.
So you're not changing the mechanics of how the service is accomplished. You're changing the process around how that information is delivered to the process server and how what the status is communicated during the process.
Absolutely. That's exactly right, because I can't change the Constitution of the United States, which is the due process clause, requires adequate notice. And that adequate notice has to be notice that tells the defendant that this is important. This is not just another piece of junk mail or an email. So that hand delivery is required by the Constitution. So we have to still abide by that. But our technology and the reach of our technology has eliminated countless hours from the law firm that the law firm has to invest in service process.
Yeah. Are you operating in all 50 states at this point? Or?
What we say to all Clio users is that you can serve anyone, anywhere, with a click of a button without leaving Clio, now that we're integrated with Clio. So we have 1,500 process servers throughout the United States, but if you need to serve in what's called a Hague Convention country, like Germany, for example, we can serve there. Even non-Hague Convention countries that don't have the same treatises with us, we also serve there.
Yeah. Does it matter? I mean, the laws about how process gets served vary from state to state, possibly from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I'm not even sure of that. So how do you accommodate for those kinds of differences?
That is a wonderful question. Thank you for asking that. It's very insightful. Because when we set about creating our technology, one of the first things we had to do was understand the rules for service of process for all 50 states, the state systems, the municipal systems, and the federal court system. And then there's a whole bunch of other courts in there that administrative courts have different rules about service of process. They're all anchored in the Constitution, which requires that hand delivery, but they all allow it to be done in different fashions. Like, I can serve somebody's spouse as long as they co-reside, even if the defendant is the husband and the person we serve is the wife, because that complies with due process, the courts have said. So we have to learn all these rules, and it depends on whether you're serving divorce papers, if you're serving an eviction, you can post that, or if you're serving something that has to be delivered either personal or substitute service on a husband or wife. So you have to know those rules. The rules that apply are the rules of the jurisdiction where the case is filed. So your home state is Massachusetts, right? If one of our customers files a case in state court in Boston, those rules apply, even if it's being served in my home state, which is Colorado. So that process server in Colorado has to know those rules from Massachusetts, and our technology guides them. The application, the mobile app, doesn't allow them to serve those documents in a way that doesn't comply with Massachusetts law. All that's baked into the technology, and the affidavit is created in a way that only allows serves that are legal in the jurisdiction where the courts originated.
Yeah. If I heard you correctly, you said that I'm a lawyer, I need to get something served, I uploaded it into the system, your AI is going to extract the necessary information and then route it to the appropriate person to accomplish that service. It's going to be a lot of lawyers out there who still get very nervous when they hear AI anything, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're telling me your AI is going to figure out who it is that should be served,
right,
there are probably some lawyers who are saying, I don't know about that. I want to make sure I'm serving the right person, and I don't want to leave this to any room for error. So right. What do you say to that?
What I would say to that is that another very insightful question, and one that we deal with humans, right? So our AI or machine learning is learning, right? So, and it's learning because when it extracts the information we need to create the affidavit, then we have an affidavit review team that when the machine is wrong, corrects the machine, therefore teaching the machine. So every affidavit gets reviewed by our affidavit team.
Okay.
So we still have humans, but that review is much more efficient than if you had to create it by hand,
right,
which is what all the other service of process companies are doing.
Right. Is there anybody else out there doing what you do? Do you have any competitors?
We don't have anybody that's doing it the way we're doing it. We're very disruptive to the industry, but I am getting some hints out there that other companies that have been around for a long time are scrapping their technology and following, because this is the way of the future, especially when you think about case management software like Clio. We're now embedded in Clio. That is the future. Law firms like mine need to only be in one application. If you think of the pizza tracker and the litigation process, Clio really is the backbone from client engagement to investigation to mediation to filing to discovery, trial, and appeal. But along that road, law firms need transactional services, one being service of process to get the thing going and then to serve all your witnesses, another being court reporting. And so forward-thinking case management software providers like Clio are establishing relationships with companies like mine to provide that transactional service,
yeah,
within their infrastructure, so paralegals and lawyers don't have to leave the case management software. They're more efficient. They can deliver legal services at a less costly manner so they can reach more people.
Yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with some companies like ServeNow. We're sitting next to the Legal Talk Network booth, mm-hmm, over here, and they're owned by a company that has ServeNow, which is more of a almost like a practice management system for process servers. I mean, it's not an interface to the lawyer,
right,
who needs to get process served. It's more for the process servers themselves.
The way to think about how we're different than that is ServeNow and ServeManager provide the process server with a piece of software that helps them manage their business, their back office business, right?
Yeah.
Keeps track of,
yeah,
the serves they're doing, et cetera. But it doesn't provide them any work. We're the connection between the law firm and the process serving company that may use ServeNow or ServeManager. They're getting work from us, and they're providing that the results of that work back to the law firm. We're just a big piece of technology that connects them at the right time and in the right place.
Yeah. So how do the fees work for this? How do you make your money? What does it cost a lawyer to use your service?
So we don't charge anybody a subscription fee. So it's free to use. It's a free technology tool to use, but you still have to pay for the service, right? So you pay for it on a transactional basis. So you pay as you go. Every time you submit a serve to our technology and it gets picked up by a process server, you're going to get charged for the process server's work, right? And we take a percentage of that, and the prosecutor takes the lion's share of that. And our prices are very much inside the market price in everywhere in the country. We don't charge more. We're just more efficient. So we get a percentage for bringing that work and creating great technology.
Yeah. How long have you been in business?
We launched our technology in August of 2018. So that's just over 4 years ago. And started with one law firm. That was mine. We were customer number one. And I talked to a paralegal that was essential to my practice. Her name was Helena Hyatt. And I said, Helena, what do you think about this? Isn't it great? She says, I hate it. I don't want to use it ever. So we had to go back to the drawing board. But that's what you do as a tech company. Right. You launch your technology to the market, you get feedback, and you implement that feedback. So we were customer number one. I think there's close to 5,000 law firms and government agencies that use us today to serve their documents.
That's awesome. Have you taken investment along the way?
Yes, we bootstrapped it, friends and family, some of my money and the co-founder's money. And then we finally sort of thought, oh gosh, we got the tiger by the tail here. We need some help. We need some, not only some capital resources, but we also need, you know, a partner that's going to, you know, provide us some operational expertise. And after a process, we decided to take a Series A round in March of this year. And there's the two venture firms that led that. One is Zach Posner, the Legal Tech Fund, mm-hmm. who introduced me to you.
Yep.
Thank you, Zach. And the other is Blue Heron out of Richmond. And they've both been fantastic partners, both very invested into the legal tech space, and have helped us even accelerate our growth even further.
Yeah. So how are you saying how much that was, or that round? Or
I can say how much that was. It's public. We did a press release.
Okay.
So it was a $5 million Series A round on the balance sheet. There was also some secondary to some of our original investors, you know, friends and family that were like, oh my gosh, I'm getting this money back plus.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was nice as well.
Yeah.
And it was $5 million on the balance sheet.
Yeah. You've alluded a couple of times to your integration with Clio, and this was part of the news that came out of this conference this week was this, basically enhanced level of integration between Clio and some of its third-party application partners, and specifically three of them this week, you being one of them. Explain what that means. So this is not just an API integration or something at this point.
Right.
This is something that really takes it to another level.
It is, and we were very fortunate to be invited to that pilot program. We did it over the summer with Clio's development team and our development team. And, you know, Clio has a lot of apps in its app store, which is fantastic. And this is the future of case management, like I discussed earlier,
yeah,
the backbone and the transaction services. And I'm very excited about that. But currently, their apps they don't feel like Clio. You leave Clio and go to that app, and then you go back to Clio, right? And the much more efficient, pleasant way, user-friendly way, is to never feel like you left Clio.
Right.
So the UI UX feels like Clio. All of our functionality appears to be in Clio. You're never moving from one platform to the other. There's no confusion about that. And that's what we endeavored to do. All functionality, but look and feel like Clio inside of Clio. And the thing that allows you to do is things like when you're a Clio user and you want to serve somebody, you've already worked up the case, you know your defendant's names, you've got the complaint and summons drafted. All you do is click on the tab that is proof that's in every one of your matters, click on that tab, click on the documents you want served, and you click on the individuals and companies that you want served. All of that stuff is already in Clio,
yeah.
And then you hit go. And all the functionality I described earlier is available to you inside of Clio. And then the affidavit of service, when it's built and finished and signed and reviewed and signed by the server, it appears in your pleadings file inside of Clio without you doing anything. There's no downloading of that. It just pops right in there. And then the charge for the serve, that's what we call it, it's kind of funny, for the delivery, if you will, appears as an expense on your client's bill. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to worry about, did accounting get an email from the paralegal to get make sure this went on Joe Smith's bill? It just happens automatically.
That's awesome.
And yes, and as a law firm owner and still a partner, it's funny because law lawyers, they'll give away their time, but they never want to give away money that they paid somebody to help their client, right?
Yeah.
The costs, they want that reimbursed, right? Because that's out-of-pocket money. They'll give away their time sometimes, and they don't like to do that either, but they really don't want to miss a cost.
Yeah.
So we've prevented that by integrating. That's the embedded experience.
Yeah. Is that tab always there, or do I have to turn it on as a Clio subscriber?
All you have to do to turn that tab on is go to the integrated apps page or search for Clio in the app store, click on that app, and then there's one button to click that you consent to using proof inside of Clio.
Yeah.
That's it. And then the tab appears in every one of your matters.
Yeah.
My guest Eric Vogt was a practicing lawyer who saw what he perceived as a broken system for managing service of process and decided to do something about it. While lots of lawyers encounter problems in the systems they work with, few ever start a company to try to tackle them. So what inspired Vogt to go out and start a legal tech company, and how difficult was it for him to get it off the ground? I'll ask him about that when we return. But first, let's hear about the sponsors whose generosity supports Law Next. It can be difficult to balance practicing law and administering your law firm. TrustBooks simplifies your firm's trust accounting process so you can focus more time on your clients' needs. Designed specifically for law firms, TrustBooks gives you peace of mind with intuitive workflows, automatic ledger maintenance, three-way reconciliations, and comprehensive dashboards to monitor cash flow. Gain confidence in your trust accounting process by visiting TrustBooks.com today. Welcome back to Law Next. In this episode, which I recorded live during the Clio Cloud Conference in October, I'm speaking with Eric Vogt, who is a practicing lawyer when he decided to found a company to disrupt how service of process is managed in the United States. What led him to tackle this issue and start a legal tech company? And what lessons has he learned about starting a company that he can share with other founders? We get to those questions and more in the second part of our interview. Eric, you know, you described early in our conversation the kind of the problem that you saw with the way process serving was happening. Lots of lawyers see a problem but never do anything about it. What inspired you to actually go out and try and start a company and tackle it?
You know, I'm going, the main motivation for me as a litigator and a trial attorney in a 15-lawyer law firm, I fielded throughout my career hundreds, maybe thousands of phone calls from people with just causes that needed to have a court make that determination. Maybe it was worth $10,000 or $20,000 to them, which is a lot of money for me and most all of Americans. And lawyers can't, they're priced out of that market.
Yeah.
Right? 80% of Americans that want, that need legal services, and small businesses and medium-sized businesses can't afford a lawyer. That's awful for judges. There's no justice. That is a really big problem for our society. The answer to that, and I apologize for getting on my soapbox, but the answer
to
that...
I like soapboxes. That's
right.
Good.
I mean, but this is truly is. I mean, because they have... They should have access to the courthouse, right? Otherwise, they feel really bad about where they live, and they feel like the justice system is slanted towards the folks with more resources. So the answer to this societal problem, in my opinion, and I talk about this a lot, is innovative, great technology like proof has produced in the services process industry, where proof is going with e-filing, where proof is going with small claims court process, where a lot of other people are, and then elevating, because the paralegal is the most underutilized resource, because lawyers have paralegals doing administrative stuff that technology should do. Then elevate that paralegal to push your cases faster, more efficiently. It's going to help your bottom line, because you're going to be able to work into that unserved market. We call it in the tech business greenfields, right? There's no competitors.
Yeah.
They're getting nothing.
Yeah.
So if you adopt technology like Clio and Proof, and you expect more from your paralegal because she or he doesn't have to do the administrative task, you're going to be able to litigate cases for people that you didn't think you could afford to litigate for otherwise.
Yeah. It's interesting because this is one of those products that tackles an everyday bread and butter issue in law practice. And yet nobody had really tackled it before. And you saw the opportunity, I guess.
Yeah, and absolutely. And, you know, I spoke to a couple people about it that were in the development world, right? They developed technology. And I remember one, we were at a Colorado, it was the summer, I was at his house, and I just mentioned it to him because he's a friend of mine. It was about 90 degrees, we're on his back porch, it was hot. And he goes, "I just got goosebumps." And I was like, "Oh no, now I'm going to have to chase this." And so I did, and it's been a wonderful journey.
Yeah. Had you ever, you ran a law firm, had you ever started a company or anything before? Do you have any experience as an entrepreneur?
No. I would say no. I own some real estate, some commercial real estate, but that's also so my law firm doesn't have to pay rent to conglomerate. So
you had business experience, but not necessarily founding experience in that sense.
What I'd like to do sometime, and maybe you can tell me if you would find this interesting since you're so steeped into the legal world and the tech world, is set up a panel where we have technology CEOs, probably from legal tech, and then also some law firm managing partners, and talk about how different these two animals are.
Yeah.
For some, they're not going to be the same because lawyers can't share profit with anybody but lawyers, unless you're a law firm in Arizona now. That's changed it. So there are some differences, but I think they both can learn from each other, and I think it would be an interesting panel at a convention.
Yeah, I think it would be. I agree with you. What have you learned? You've been doing this 5 years. You've raised some money. You've got a large customer base now. There are lots of other people wandering around here at this convention who are pretty early stage in their own startups. What advice would you give other tech founders about how to succeed, or something they might not be aware of?
Yeah, what I would say, and this is especially true, there are a couple things I'd say. First of all, you don't need to be young to be an entrepreneur. In fact, in not being young and living in an apartment you can't afford, or living in somewhere you can afford and you're established, gives you, as my wife would call it in the development world, patient money, right? So make sure before you take the leap that you're not unduly risking your financial welfare. Because sometimes it takes longer than you think. So plan for having enough runway personally that you can see this thing through.
Yeah.
Now, you may gonna have to eat ramen and bologna.
Yeah.
But at least be able to eat ramen and bologna long enough to see if this thing happens.
Right.
The second thing I would say is solve a problem and make sure you solve that with great product market fit, right? And what that means is, because you never know quite how the market's going to react to your product, what that means is you don't need to build a perfect product, because you can't. It's like the story I told you about Helana. You need to what they call an MVP in the business, right? I thought that was some most valuable player until I finally asked what that acronym means. It's minimally viable product. Don't spend too much money on development before you know that the market's going to love it.
Yeah.
Right? And the market won't love it, but then make adjustments. But don't try to make it perfect at the first shot before you get feedback from the market.
Yeah. When was that moment for you?
When was that moment when I knew
it? When you knew the market was going to love it. When was that moment that you said, okay, this is going to work?
You know, the secret about starting a tech company is that the technology doesn't work for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, we were doing it so old school. I mean
the business. When you, at the point at which you knew this is a real business and this is something I'm going to do for a while.
Well, as a lawyer and a litigating attorney, I'm very cautious. Yeah. So I still don't know.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Yes,
right.
Everybody tells me this is going to be around for a long, long time. Right. The flywheel is going.
Yeah. Well, you've pretty much quit your day job and you're,
yeah.
This is your day
what
job.
What I would say, I'd say when we had about $30,000 in revenue a month, and people were really excited about it, and the technology has progressed so much from there.
Yeah.
You know, we were still doing a lot of stuff in the back office, right? I was still running out serving papers, driving across the state of Colorado.
Right.
I think it was about $30,000, and then we started to get traction in other states where you're like, it wasn't just my reputation as a lawyer that was selling this product, because the lawyers in Texas didn't know who I was.
Right.
I leaned on my friends in the legal community to adopt us.
Yeah.
And then, so it was really about $30,000, and some Texas law firms were loving it, so.
Yeah. Anything else that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to point out about proof or yourself or anything else?
Oh, I don't think there's much more. But just to emphasize that, you know, we have to do something about our legal system here to make it more democratic. And I really want to get the word out to other lawyers, my colleagues that have done the same things that I've done. There is a lot of available market to you. You know, we got to stop fighting over the 20% that we think are the clients we want. We can move down market some and serve some less fortunate people, middle class people, and still make plenty of money. So go out and adopt some technology
here.
To help you.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay.
Well, Eric, thanks so much. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah,
and hear about proof.
Same. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be on your podcast.
And I'm honored to have you.
Okay. Thank you.
My sincere thanks to Eric Vogt for sitting down with me during the Clio Cloud conference to talk about his company, Proof. What are your thoughts on today's show? Share them by tweeting us at LawNext Podcast. LawNext is produced, engineered, and edited by Populous Radio. I'm your host, Bob Ambrogi. I hope you'll join us again next time for another episode of LawNext.